Time for It's a Free Country, a genial debate which takes a fresh look at the intriguing subject of flying saucers. Hoping to control the proceedings is your chairman, John Timpson.
Very good evening to you, and welcome to It's a Free Country. We shall be taking some controversial popular belief and placing it on trial to see if our resident protagonists can sway the audience here in the studio and, of course, you at home. They have a limited time to put their case, and they can each call an expert witness who will later be cross-examined. There'll be a bell to tell them when their time is up, and if our protagonists get too obstreperous, I shall endeavour to silence them with this. Now, the question is, do you believe in flying saucers? Now, we asked our studio audience to vote on that before we came on the air, but we'll keep the result of that vote secret until the end of the program. And after they've heard the case for and against, we'll ask them to vote again and see which of our protagonists has persuaded them to change their minds, if any. Now, first of all, let me read you the Webster's Dictionary definition of a flying saucer so we know precisely what we're talking about. A flying saucer is defined as any of various unidentified moving objects repeatedly reported as seen in the air and usually alleged to be saucer-shaped or disc-shaped. Now, Mr. Patrick Moore is the protagonist who will speak against that. I suppose you could call him the antagonist. But before he does so, the case for the flying saucer will be presented by Mr. Alfred Marks.
I'm very pleased they've chosen this subject, especially being opposed by such a well-known and famous astronomer as Patrick Moore, because one of my best friends in Australia is Colonel Arthur Page, a well-known astronomer, and he was anti, and I converted him, so I hope to convert you, Patrick, before the evening is up. Now, I can't prove that flying saucers exist any more than Patrick can prove they do not exist. So what I do propose, therefore, is to present to you certain evidence of certain sightings. I'm going to discount the evidence of extremists who say they've seen little green men with three legs. And I'm quite aware that some sightings can be put down to drink, hallucinations, Met balloons, spots before the eyes, incorrectly observed aircraft, and so on. But I've chosen some evidence at random from people whose opinions must be respected. But first, let's consider that the flying saucer idea is not a recent one. There are reports of drawings of flying saucers in caves in France and in Spain. The cave drawings are on the roof and are of the classic saucer shape inverted with a boss-like protuberance at the top. Now, these drawings can be dated to about 12,000 to 10,000 B.C., Now, frequently, they're in caves where other drawings of bison, mammoth, horse, and man appear at some distance from them, indicating that the people and the animals of the day were afraid of the UFOs. Also seen in the caves are drawings of the sausage-shaped UFO with six miniature discs flying alongside. Now, please keep this in mind, as I have evidence from a BOAC pilot of a sighting of one UFO with six outriders. On April the 15th, 1897, at Lingrove, Iowa, the citizens saw a large construction in the air moving slowly north. At Shelby that same evening, a large object with one white and one green light was seen. At the same time, in Middleville, changing lights of red, blue, and green appeared in the southwest and moved north. More and more independent witnesses gave evidence of different sightings over the same area, which proves there were many kinds of saucer out that night. Coming more up to date and a little nearer home, in 1968, the Reverend Anthony Millikan, walking with his wife in Arnus Park near Bristol, saw a glowing object hovering 6 feet from the ground, 80 yards away, revolving and steady in position. It faded after about 20 seconds. There were many other sightings about that time at Warminster and Bristol by people unknown to the vicar. On November the 30th, 1973, the pilot of a small plane landing at Turin Airport saw a luminous ball at 400 meters above the runway. The object made off in an irregular fashion with fantastic lateral deviations impossible for any known aircraft to execute. Two airline pilots also saw it, one of them having to take avoiding action to prevent a collision. They all said they'd never seen anything like it before. Robert Galli, the French Minister of Defense, gave Otmarsby the first establishment broadcast on flying saucers in 1974. He said that since 1954, when a department was set up in the ministry to study eyewitness accounts of sightings, there has been a great mass of detail and reports from pilots and the commanding personnel of various Air Force centers that agreed in quite a disturbing manner.
Thank you, Mr. Marks.
Thank you.
We have to stop you there.
That's pity.
What a magnificent breath you took 4 minutes ago. Well, now we'll be hearing more from Mr. Marks in a moment or two, but now to put the case against flying saucers, Mr. Patrick Moore.
Well, I must say I'm very sorry that my learned opponent was stopped when he was, but he was just making my own case for me so beautifully. We've got, first of all, you know, to distinguish between the two kinds of flying saucers, as you so very rightly said. The unidentified flying object that has been reported in the air, and those evidences, so-called, of contact with, well, we can't see little green men now, little green people, shall we say, who are coming from other worlds. Now, this, I think, is vitally important, because if you tell me that there are things in the air that can't be explained, well, I'm not proposing to oppose that one. Things like ice crystals, inversions, you can get all kinds of phenomena. Now, I don't propose to say very much more about the so-called contactees. I think I must tell you one very brief story. Some years ago in America, I did actually meet a man who wrote a book called Aboard a Flying Saucer, in which he described his experiences aboard a flying saucer piloted by a beautiful lady from Venus named Mrs. Aura Raines. And this came out, carefully entitled, Non-Fiction, A Story of a True Experience. And it's had a very good sale. The trouble is that his wife didn't appreciate it. She promptly sued him for divorce, cited the lady from Venus, and she won. But of course, when we come across people who say, I have seen a flying saucer, the obvious answer is, well, you're a nut. Or it's too soon after closing time. And this, of course, is precisely what you can't say. And I think I can dispose of your sightings straight away by two cases, both of which are well authenticated. You may remember, way back in 1938, there was a misleading broadcast in America of the famous Wells story, The War of the Worlds. It was produced by Orson Welles, and people took it to be an actual news broadcast. And there were people who actually saw the Martians, felt the heat rays, and saw the fighting machines. And there was a very considerable panic. Now, this was a broadcast, and yet people came forward prepared to swear that they had seen these things. And going back, oh, it's 20 years now, a slightly discreditable episode in which I was myself involved. I admit that many years ago, using an assumed name, I put in a report to a local paper of a flying saucer seen over Forest Row, and over 24 people wrote in to confirm it. And it's very significant indeed that there are no serious astronomers, no scientists, who have ever, in fact, seen a thing that they can attribute to a spacecraft from another world. And this, in fact, is what we are talking about. Now, let's come on then to this question of, if these things could be spaceships, where would they come from? And I am going to take point. No, I'm not.
And I hope perhaps later there'll be an opportunity to find out where they came from. There will be an opportunity to come back to you. Meanwhile, we now ask Mr. Marks to call his witness in support of flying saucers.
Yes, yes, indeed, yes. I have very great pleasure in introducing my witness. He is Mr. Charles Gibbs Smith, the well-known aviation historian. won't lead you with any questions. The floor's all yours, sir.
It surprises me this debate's coming on at all, because all the people in the know, in the intelligence world and elsewhere, know perfectly well there are flying saucers and known it for years. Some of them don't like talking about it, embarrasses them. And as for Patrick saying that no astronomers are involved, this is absolute rubbish. Professor Tombaugh, who helped discover Pluto, has seen them, recorded them, and my friend Professor Alan Hynek, 20 years advisor to the United States Air Force on saucers, has now written a conclusive book on it saying that they certainly do exist. And he had an absolute ringside seat for 20 years. A wartime naval commander-in-chief told a friend of mine the other day that he had accepted them completely, he knew about them, he'd seen them himself, and it said there wasn't a question of discussion. That's the obvious. And it's only people who like to fly up in the air, like my dear Patrick Moore, who just sort of fiddle around with the thing, you know, go into the people that know, go into the intelligence sources in the British and other governments, and you'll find that they all know, and they have known for years and years and years, but they don't talk about it. We all know about crystals in the sky and angels and balloons and all this rubbish. They are never mistaken by any sensible person. The reports are well over 1,000 of them a year, and of those 1,000, even if 60% are hoaxes, many of them are, the hardcore is well known to be existing, and they are well known to be controllable, and they are well known to exist. That is really absolutely true, I can assure you.
Mr. Gibbsworth, would you now... You're going to have a chance to meet Patrick Moore again when he's going to question you a little later on. May I introduce my second witness, a little surprise for Patrick here. You heard me refer earlier to a BOAC Stratocruiser pilot who gave his evidence. We have that pilot with us here. Would you like to greet Captain James Howard?
Could I just interrupt at this point, Mr. Marks? I can see Mr. Moore is too polite to do so, but he was, I think, surprised that you had two witnesses when he was advised there might only be one.
Yes.
This is without precedent, indeed, and as we have no precedent, this is the first program we are creating one.
Oh, I am perfectly happy, sir. I am batting on a very good wicket.
Well, I could have put it rather more succinctly and say, sucks boo to you, Patrick. Captain Howard, you are a retired BOAC Stratocruiser pilot.
That is so, yes.
Would you like to tell us what you saw?
Yes, on the evening of June 21st, 1954, I was in command of a scheduled BOAC flight from New York to London. About 3.5 hours after taking off from New York, we just crossed over a point in the St. Lawrence estuary called Seven Islands, and we were flying above a broken, scattered cloud at 19,000 feet. And I happened to glance out the window on the left-hand side of the flight deck and saw something moving below the clouds. I could see them through the gaps in the clouds. And after a few moments, we left the cloud deck behind us, and we were then in perfectly clear visibility. And these things were clearly in sight. There was one large object with three smaller ones ahead of it and three behind it. So there was one large one, six small ones. And they climbed up until they were level at our own altitude and stayed alongside us for 20 minutes, a distance of 80 miles, in perfectly clear evening. The sun was about to set when we first saw them, and by the time that we left them, the sun had just gone below the horizon. But the visibility was perfect.
It's true to say, Captain Howe, that your passengers saw it too, is that right?
Yes, everyone on the aircraft. There was a total of... 39 people, including the crew, all had a perfectly clear sight of these things, and in fact sat with their eyes glued to their noses glued to the window.
You've seen ice crystals before, haven't you, Captain?
Yes.
And you didn't hear Orson Welles broadcast the War of the Worlds, did you?
No.
Thank you very much indeed.
Now, Mr. Moore, you will have the opportunity to cross-examine both those witnesses in due course, but now would you care to produce your own expert?
I would be delighted, sir. May I call, please, Dr. Christopher Evans. Dr. Evans, as you probably know, he's a very well-known writer, very well-known broadcaster, and, of course, a very well-known experimental psychologist. Now, I think, once again, I'm going to follow Mr. Mark's example. I'm not going to sort of punt you, because I know that you have strong views on this matter. So I'm going to just begin by asking, if I may, do you believe in flying saucers?
No, I don't. But I also think it's very important to distinguish between, as you've done, between flying saucers and unidentified flying objects. I, like you and probably everybody else in the room, believe in unidentified flying objects. It would be very peculiar if every object in the sky had been identified. What I don't believe, and I really don't think there's sufficient evidence to believe it, is that these things are flying saucers, or as implied, I think, spaceships from some other planet. Now, there are two reasons why I don't believe this. Fairly basic ones, actually. The first is this, that as a psychologist, I know how awful people are at giving witness to things that they've seen, how bad they are at testifying, and how unreliable their memories are. And that's why one wishes, for example, that Captain Howard's remarkable story had been backed up by a photograph. I'm surprised that 39 people in the Strata cruiser didn't take one decent picture of this thing, because if they had, I think we'd be talking about something quite different today. Now, the second thing that makes me, again, suspicious about this is I, too, am a pilot. And the reason here that I don't believe in flying saucers is because I've actually seen them. Now, that may seem a bit of a paradox, what it amounts to. I've on many occasions seen things which have really surprised me. To give one example, if I can, I was flying down to the West Country in a light airplane, and not too long ago, in fact, and on the way down I saw something which looked like the classic picture of a flying saucer. That was a sort of luminous disc moving at a very peculiar speed. And the passenger with me also saw this. And, you know, although I don't believe in saucers, my hair stood on end for a moment. This thing seemed to be traveling at an incredible speed and behaving in a very peculiar way. Now, we watched this for 5 or 10 minutes, some such amount, and suddenly we realized, to our amazement, that it was a helicopter coming into land at the local naval air station. Now, some trick of the light, I don't know what it was, had made it look like a flying saucer. Now, we both then saw the helicopter, and that cleared our minds up about it. But if we hadn't seen the helicopter, and we'd been disposed to believe in flying saucers, then maybe I'd be telling you a different story today. But there's a sting to this story, and this is perhaps the crux of it. About 4 months after this experience, the passenger who travelled down with me to Bristol, I heard him talking in a group, and I heard him describing this story as a flying saucer story. He'd forgotten about the helicopter, and he was busy telling people about the flying saucer that we'd seen on the way down to Bristol. Now, that tells me acres about human beings, acres about their unreliability as witnesses, and also the way in which they'll make quite an interesting story into a super one, if they can.
So it's fair enough to say that you regard flying saucers as being ordinary natural objects in the atmosphere that are misinterpreted by tricks of the mind, if you like to put it that way.
Well, it may be all kinds of things. Let me put it this way. I think that's the simplest and the safest explanation to take. Now, if I'm fascinated by this topic, if a flying saucer landed in Trafalgar Square tomorrow, I'd be the first to rush out and look at it. You know, this would intrigue me no end. I would like to see some decent photographs, and perhaps Captain Howard could tell us later on why nobody there thought to take a picture. But the only photographs I've ever seen look like the most silly kind of fakes.
And one...
Well, And I'm sure you will have noted, if you had your stopwatches out, that we gave that witness the total time of the other two witnesses put together so that we balance out the two arguments. Now, before we leave us, Dr. Evans, could we ask now Mr. Marks to conduct your cross-examination?
Yes, Dr. Evans, good evening. Let's take up the question of photographs. You say, if I heard you correctly, you said, because there are no photographs, we have no proof.
No, I didn't say that at all. I said I would have been much more convinced if I had seen some good photographs.
Yes, but because there are no photographs, are you equally convinced there are not flying saucers?
No, in fact, I'm not convinced there are not flying saucers. I just say the evidence that they exist is not good.
I see. But there are photographs. Whether you want to discount the space or not is entirely up to you. Mr. Gibbs-Smith has some photographs, which he assures me are not fake. They've gone through rigid tests by authoritative people, and he says they are not fakes, and I find to take his word for it. Now, these caves, drawings in the caves, the prehistoric cave drawings, I don't suppose any of those ever saw helicopters or balloons. How do you explain that away?
There might be all kinds of things. Another thing, incidentally, which looks very like a flying saucer, seems incredible, is a bird. If you get light reflected from a bird, it will look like a shining disc. Now, yes. I've seen this many times.
For a pilot who's flown for 34 years, responsible, logical, technically minded people who know what ice crystals look like, know what birds and helicopters look like, this can't be discounted easily, can it?
Not easily at all, no. But I think that the evidence that these things are flying saucers or spaceships is very, very thin. As I said before, I believe in unidentified flying objects. We're all talking about those. But these are spaceships? No, I don't see the evidence for that. As I said, a decent picture would do.
Yes. Shakespeare said it, didn't he? There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamed of in your philosophy, Horatio.
And I absolutely agree with him.
I think... I want to thank you very much for being with me, Dr. Evans. I'm very pleased about that.
Well, now, Mr. Moore, would you care to recall the two opposing witnesses?
I should be delighted to do so.
Which one would you like first?
I think, if I may, a very brief question to Captain Howard, if I might. Two very brief questions. You say that these sources were 80 miles away.
No, not 80 miles away, no. I should think it's very hard to say how far away they were because I don't know how big they were.
Exactly.
They followed us for 80 miles.
But what you are saying, in fact, is that you don't have an accurate measure of their distance.
Not at all.
And therefore, you cannot possibly tell their size, because as you know better than I do, it is impossible to tell the size of an object unless you know its distance, or vice versa.
Absolutely.
So, in fact, you have absolutely no idea of how big or how far away these things were.
I wouldn't say not any idea.
You better give scientific proof.
No.
Well, you have no proof at all.
I take the point.
Absolutely no proof of how big they were, how big they were, how far away they were.
Okay.
And afterwards, when you go and talk to passengers, did you get the various descriptions from the passengers? And did you check up after a few weeks to see whether they all recall the same thing?
No, obviously not. I lost my passengers when I got to London. I have no contact with them since, but I kept in touch with the crew.
Thank you, Captain Tarp.
Thank you, Captain.
Now, if I may tackle my old friend, Mr. Charles Gibbs-Smith, who I have the greatest respect as a very skillful student of the history of aircraft, with whom I don't entirely agree on this particular point. You know, one thing that always strikes me here is that when we come to a controversial subject, such as flying saucers, there is always the mysterious and anonymous they, with a capital T. And when you come down to try and nail down absolute facts, this is very difficult to do. You've been referring to high-up sources in various governments who know perfectly well that flying saucers exist. Who are they?
Clearly, I am not going to spout the name
exactly
of a man who led the war. It'd be idiotic of me and practically libelous.
Exactly.
But what about two
What about two of your own kith? What about Tombo and what about Heineck?
I do know Dr. Tombo quite well. But he does not necessarily state that these things are spaceships from another world. What he is saying, and saying absolutely correctly, is that there are things in the atmosphere that we cannot explain. And this I would entirely agree. But these are not spaceships from another world, and he has never said that they are.
Nor have I.
But in that case, your whole argument surely falls to the ground.
Not at all. There are intelligently controlled, unidentified flying objects which do not fit any known scientific or natural phenomenon in existence.
Can you tell me how exactly you know that these things are intelligently controlled?
By many.
Well, can we have some?
Well, for heaven's sake, the radar sightings, gun sight lock-ons in Alaska. Lord knows, I mean, there are scores of cases.
Well, thank you very much, Edwin. And now it is the final opportunity for the two protagonists to sum up or give a final word about their case. One more word from Mr. Marx.
Yeah, I'm very unconvinced by Patrick's argument. Our galaxy, as Patrick well knows, I'm teaching my grandmother to suck eggs. Grandperson, I think. For your information, Patrick, our galaxy is a vast system of stars so enormous that in our recognizable space of reference, it's almost impossible for us to imagine. There are, to our knowledge, galaxies both smaller and larger than our own. I'm correct, aren't I?
Absolutely correct.
And therefore, it's a mathematical probability, almost a mathematical certainty, isn't it, that somewhere in our galaxy and in countless others, there exist ideal conditions for reproducing life, intelligent life.
It's going off of a tangent, if I may say.
The point is,
I'm not saying that sources are impossible. No. What we have all said and what we have proved to the hilt is that there's not the slightest evidence that they are genuine here.
Now, just a moment, please. If you accept... You will be clapping the other side of your faces in a moment. If you accept this, then we must accept that there's something maybe more advanced than us, right?
That would be quite easy.
Right. If they're more advanced, why couldn't they not have interstellar?
They could. Yeah. What I'm saying is there's not the slightest evidence that they have and have come here. I am not denying the possibility. There may be many beings in the galaxy who have mastered interstellar travel. What we've been talking about, or trying to talk about sensibly this evening, is quite simply, is there any evidence that these beings have visited us? And the answer is quite conclusively no.
Now, I was going to invite you to have your final word.
Well, I can make it very brief, sir. Somebody came up to the Duke of Wellington and said, "Excuse me, is your name Smith?" And he replied, "Madam, if you will believe that, you will believe anything."
Well, I don't believe his name is Smith, and I do believe in flying saucers. But the point is this, if we went by evidence only... Charming, that's my whole argument, you see. I don't like this game.
My lot to sum up this, which is a nigh on impossible task. I will try and take you back over the arguments if I can. As I recall, Mr. Marx launched his peroration with a review of the history of flying saucers, going back to prehistoric flying saucers on caves, even before the days when they'd even invented ordinary saucers.
Mr. Chairman, please don't be flippant to try and destroy my argument. I'm terribly serious about this.
I shall endeavour to be perfectly fair to both sides.
Thank you.
Your first witness implied everyone knew about flying saucers, but didn't like mention it because it's embarrassing, I think was the phrase that was used. And when questioned on this, he was asked not to talk about astronomers, but talk about intelligent sources, Mr. Moore said. Doesn't speak too kindly for astronomers, but I'm sure you can...
We're a mixed bunch, you know.
But then he did indeed quote a number of names which were obviously familiar to Mr. Moore. They completely baffled me. So then we had Captain Howard, and I leave it to the audience here, to you at home, to consider what it was that he saw and precisely how it should be interpreted. I noticed that in his opening speech, Mr. Moore said the only thing you can say to people who say they've seen flying saucers is to say that you're a nut. I noticed that you refrained from doing so in this case, which was extremely good. But
do bear in mind, I did not know there was to be a second witness. Otherwise, I would have chosen my word much
more. I didn't know you bring in the Duke of Wellington. So.
Mr. Moore quoted the many cases of suspected sightings which turned out to be hoaxes, and indeed Mr. Fang is such a hoax himself, and produced as his expert witness Dr. Evans, a psychologist who advised us how unreliable we all are, which is a pretty safe bet. And also said that he was a pilot, as indeed Moore is a pilot. Everybody on this program seems to be a pilot. Tried to point out that even pilots, noble fellows as they are, can still make mistakes. So those were the two things. The one point which perhaps I ought to give a little guidance on is the point that Dr. Evans made when he said that he didn't believe in flying saucers. He did believe that there were unidentified flying objects. So I ought to bring you back, before I ask you to vote, to the actual definition which we are talking about when we ask you to give a decision on this, that a flying saucer is defined as any of various unidentified moving objects repeatedly reported as seen in the air, usually alleged to be saucer-shaped or disc shape. Now, I leave you to decide whether that has been approved or not approved. And I will ask you now, ladies and gentlemen, here in the studio, and indeed you at home, to have a think as well, and to vote on this question. Right, now, ladies and gentlemen, we have the final results. And now let me point out to you that the important thing here is not who got the most votes, but who swayed the most people to change their minds during the course of this debate. This is the important thing. Now, let me tell you, first of all, that before we started the debate this evening, there were 41% believed in flying saucers and 59% did not. That was 41 for and 59 against. And since hearing the arguments, the register is 45 are for flying saucers and 55 against. So the number has gone up for flying saucers, and I declare Mr. Alfred Marks the winner. If you changed your mind at home as well. Well, whether you did or not, on behalf of Dr. Christopher Evans, Mr. Charles Gibbs Smith, Mr. Captain James Howard, from Alfred Marks and Patrick Moore, and from myself, John Simpson, a very good evening to you.